Hello, and welcome to another episode of Sandy by the Sea, a splash to the ebb and flow of cultural life here in Portsmouth. In this programme, I find out more about Portsmouth Digital Creatives Network. I talk to local filmmaker and digital artist Kai Wilson about his work, some of the networking activity in the art world locally, some of his experimentation with the moving image, and the challenges of studying art. I also catch up with Denise Callender, a local artist who, as a day job, works within Portsmouth University's Faculty of Creative and Cultural Industries. Denise tells me about some of the current projects within the university's exhibition space, the increasing crossovers between art and music, and the growing need for artists to interconnect on a professional and social level. Kai Wilson, you are a coordinator, if you like, of the Digital Creatives Network in Portsmouth, which is quite a grand title. Can you start by telling us something a bit about the network and how it came about?
Well, I'd say predominantly I'm actually an artist and filmmaker first. I'd say that is my title. Basically, Digital Creatives, it did exist for some time, probably a couple of years, really.
Yeah.
It basically began when I went to a short film festival in Portsmouth. I think it was run by someone called Karen Savage and Steve Fisher. I believe it's now defunct now, that particular festival.
Right.
But I was having my work shown abroad, a place like America, and that, and I thought it was quite strange that I could have my work shown the other side of the world. And I didn't know where to show it locally.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to network and meet people where I could see other work and, you know, maybe show my work in places.
And how did you get into film personally? What's your kind of your journey into film?
It sort of began quite a few years ago, really, when I was probably doing my A-level art, and I started just using film because I thought it was quite an interesting medium. And it sort of combined a lot of my interests, which are visuals and music and things like that. And I ended up going to Stoke College. I did like an H&D. And then I came back here and started doing, just working really, and trying to become a graphic designer.
Yeah.
And I started carrying on making films, but I found that my films were more in an art context. So I sort of became a fine artist, and that's where I am today, really.
And tell me a bit about film as you see it, because I looked at your website, which I think is quite fascinating in terms of it's very intricate and stunning visually, which is, you know, it kind of really catches the eye. Tell me, some of the things it says on there is that one of your challenges, if you like, is kind of blurring the distinctions between different mediums, if you like. So some people traditionally see cinema and film as one thing, and video, and, you know, increasingly these days, mobile video, if you like. And some of the things that you do look at merging a number of things together, is that right?
Well, I feel we're on a bit of a crest of a wave. If you think about video as a medium, as an art medium, it's relatively new. It's only probably about 30 years old, even though cinema goes back about 100 years, but I feel that I make art cinema, you know, I'd say that is the terminology.
Yeah.
I feel that's one of the reasons I am actually interested in the medium of video.
Yeah.
The problem is what happens now, you say video art, and kind of what happens, everything is chucked into that box. So it could be quite diverse, it could be experimental films, it could be avant-garde films, it could be anything really, and they throw it into a box. And I think part of the problem now is how this movement carries on, how it splinters out into different art forms, you know.
Yeah. So you used the word experimental there, and experimental art and experimental video. What, just unpack that slightly for us, because what are you experimenting with, and what are you looking to kind of arrive at, if you see what I mean?
Well, I suppose it's like non-mainstream, but I'm more interested in, I'm actually moving into video installations now, so you have more of a, like a spatial element. So you're kind of watching a DVD, but it's, you know, not necessarily, it could be narrative driven, but it's not like watching a film, and I feel that that's kind of a format that's been tried and tested many times, and it's more of a commercial thing, which was made for commerce. That's what Hollywood exists for and still exists today.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in more the way the actual medium can be in different realms, you know, and used in a different way.
So is it a case of it being perhaps more sensory and more about the environment than just the actual kind of visual looking at a screen and taking on board some pictures? Is that, I mean, that's probably breaking it down too much.
No, I believe... there is an extra dimension, especially when you take it into a gallery space or as a video installation, but that's not saying you can't watch stuff in a cinema. I just feel it is more about the feelings and what the work is about and what it means, really, is more important.
And who are some of the artists that you admire and look to, if you like, for inspiration and, you know, sort of guidance in that field, if you like?
It could be, well, it's quite broad, really. I'm influenced by music, like people at Radiohead. I like the films by David Lynch. In the art, I suppose it's like Matthew Barney, Bill Viola, Doug Aiken, loads of different people, really. And I'm finding more and more people than, because I'm doing a master's course now.
Yeah.
And the lecturers are really good there, including Nergin, who's actually a video installation artist himself. So he's been really helpful in moving my art form forward, you know, because he's basically doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And how important is the, you mentioned a couple of sort of bands there, how important is the music in terms of conveying the message through the video, if you...
Well, I think I don't necessarily use them as a direct source. It's kind of almost like it's a feeling what they have and
yeah.
the emotions they bring in their work. And I kind of feel that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to work out who I am and put something into the world that's creative and, you know, maybe inspires other people to be like non-mainstream and to make something that means something.
So, I mean, there's quite an element of risk in that experimentation, I suppose, isn't there? I mean, are there things that you've worked on that you think, well, actually, that's the wrong road to go down, or, you know,
but not really. Well, I've seen experimentation. Sometimes the things that don't work are actually the best things about it, and even if you don't realise that at the time.
Mm.
And I think the risk is really important, because without risk, things never move forward anyway.
Tell me about Portsmouth's kind of filmmaking and kind of digital creative scene. How does that exist, and you know, how vibrant is that?
Well, I believe there's a lot of stuff going on.
Mm.
The problem with Portsmouth, what I've found personally,
mm.
is there's lots of different splinter groups, and
yeah.
you can go to all these different events, and you know, lots of people are trying really hard and trying to do something, and a lot of different things as well. So you kind of see all these people at different places, but there isn't really one cohesive thing. And I think some people are trying, some people are still trying to do these kind of things. And I sort of did that with digital creatives originally, and now because I didn't have time and I wanted to create my own work, that took paramount really. And obviously the other stuff, even though it still exists, and I pass on contacts and network with other people, if you know, it's one of these things that you can only do so many things really with your time.
Yeah, I mean, you said at the outset that obviously you're an artist first. Is that a continual process in terms of your creative process? Because obviously, you know, you have a day job, if you like. Is your kind of creative process something that runs in parallel to your kind of your day to day, or is it something that you get flashes of inspiration about? Or
I am an artist, so I don't do anything, but I am just, that's the way I am as a person, and all I'm doing is understanding that and learning more.
Okay.
And basically spending more time pushing that as much as a professional I can be at that, doing my particular art.
Tell me how Portsmouth as a place and as an environment influences perhaps some of the things that you do. Because we were talking earlier about some of the other places that you've lived in, and you mentioned Stoke. Do you think that there are things that positively kind of promote your kind of creative thinking within a given environment in terms of a place?
There is some. I think every place you're at, you'll make the most of that opportunity. And I feel that maybe informs the work you do as well. I feel, you know, a lot of places, that they don't seem to focus on supporting the art, you know, and filmmaking in general. And it is quite hard for people to stay in one place sometimes, because there isn't really the opportunity or the to keep pushing forward. But you kind of meet the people. It's good for networking. And I think they're part of your journey as well, and the success of your work to make it better.
How... In this kind of multimedia age, if you like, even to call it that sounds old-fashioned, I think, how easy is it now to be a filmmaker? Or perhaps, importantly, how easy is it now to be a good filmmaker?
I don't know, that's a bit of a difficult question.
Yeah, it is a difficult
one. What is good in certain people may not be so good in others. All I want to do is, me personally, is just push on in what I feel is important, whether that's commercially viable or not.
Mm.
I think the more interesting it is, and the more experimental, and the more risks you're willing to take, will probably make it a better piece of work anyway. And I think that the problem I found with conventional filmmaking is you have to compromise your ideas too much. And I feel that if I've control of my projects, which I do almost totally, and I have to get funding, that helps me move them forward. But I still have complete control of the project, basically, and I can work with who I want and not dilute my ideas too much.
Tell me about the funding situation, because that's an interesting one. I noticed that some of the work that you've done, I think, has had funding from National Lottery and from Arts Council. Is inevitably in this kind of, in the current economic climate, is it more difficult to kind of pin down some of that funding, and are there more restrictions on that funding?
Well, I would have thought it's still hard, because I think everyone's feeling the pinch.
Yeah.
But generally, it's always been a bit like this. And there is a misconception that artists do stuff for free, and I'm not in that situation, and I don't feel I want to do that. You know, I think if I do more projects, you can get the funding. It's kind of you being a bit savvy about what you need to do, what people you can collaborate with, and they're people you may have worked with before, or you may be thinking about working with them in the future, and just trying to be think about what is important for my project and not compromise, because I felt that in the past I've probably tried to go down certain routes to just get money, and it's not really, it doesn't benefit the art and it just wastes time really.
Do you think that perhaps as a society we don't prioritise art and culture highly enough?
Well,
in terms of spending, in terms
yeah,
of...
Yeah, well, I don't think we do. It's all about commerce and, you know, the bottom dollar, you know, but it's not so good, you know, because nothing ever moves forward, I don't feel.
And, yeah.
I feel that's one of the shame about everything, because they kind of rely on artists a lot and, you know, everyone's got to get by.
And how important do you think that creative arts are in terms of shaping a city's future and its culture? What kind of impact do you think those things can have?
Well, it's massive. And I think the problem is it's never utilised totally. And that's why a lot of cities stay behind the other cities, because I don't think they have the people who want to go there and stay there, really. That's kind of the success. And it will attract more people to the cities in the long run.
So obviously you mentioned earlier that some of your work gets international recognition and it's perhaps more difficult at a kind of local level. Do you think that's a common problem for artists? Or do you think there are... Are there perhaps hubs of artists that are stronger in some cities than others that, you know, get recognised more on a national scene before an international one?
It varies, really. I feel that there's, you know, I've had my work shown locally, nationally and internationally. So it's kind of where your work fits. It doesn't necessarily mean whether it's good or not either. And that's quite hard to target who is where you're going to, and especially what I'm doing with visual arts. It's all the moving image, you know, it's kind of... Where do I fit? And it's, some festivals may not have it, and it might not be, it could be right, but that particular work doesn't fit with that festival, what programme they're running. So it could be really different wherever you go, really.
Kai, tell me about some of the projects that you've been involved with recently and some of the things that you've been working on.
Well, the piece of work itself is inspired by like a recurring dream and suffrage prisoners. Mm-hmm. The idea is I'm going to go to Spain and film an actress in the gallery space in Madrid. And then I'm going to project it as a single-channel video installation. So it'll be the same size. The idea is it's like an illusion that when you walk in there, you think it's real. And it's like about absence and presence. So you'll see the what you think is a live performance, and then you'll realise it's actually a projection. So you're in the same space, so you're seeing something that's there but not there.
Tell me something about the kind of creative process that produces something like that. It's a difficult question, but how does an idea like that hit you? Or is it the product of... You know, several kind of months of fraught, kind of, you know, focused thinking, or did you get inspired by a particular thing? Tell me a little bit about that.
It's a bit of a mix, really. I think when you have, I have lots of ideas, and I have done historically, and I've just documented them, and sometimes I chuck things in a box, and they don't surface. And now and again, I might look through this repertoire of bits of paper or notes that I've made on the computer, and to see if anything inspires me or adds to what I'm working on. And that could spark off something, and I could just be laying in the bath or something, and something. Because I'm thinking about it subconsciously, or even I might wake up. And these ideas, I'm always thinking of all different projects. It's never just one project, but sometimes that particular idea doesn't work and it gets binned for good, or it may be something that happens in the future. And I'm quite interested in that idea that something is undeveloped, but it will be realised at some point, maybe.
Yeah, so there's a number of kind of potential projects that you have, and I suppose some of those might link together.
They do, yeah. Sometimes they merge, and then other ones, they splinter off and they become their own project. It just depends on my time and whether I feel strongly about it and whether I can get it realised, really.
Is it possible that you've had a recurring dream about a project about a recurring dream? Is that possible? Or
no, I'm not sure. This one about a recurring dream was this, basically it's to do with suffrage, and it was just someone who was tied up and I couldn't release this woman. And basically I just thought that was quite strange. And this, I started seeing some research in suffrage prisoners and that, and reconstructions on the internet, you know, like photographs of it. And I thought this was perfect for this thing in Spain, really, because I wanted this, a live performance that would be like durational as well. And it sort of just happened from some idea I wrote down probably about 10 years ago or something.
Kai, tell me about your website, which is called New Oil Sky, which is a very interesting title for a website. And it's a kind of, I suppose it's more of a portfolio than just a website. Yeah. Tell me about some of the things that are on there.
The actual name is an anagram of my name, because I didn't want just my name to be the website. And I also wanted it to be non-corporate. So basically it may not conform to all these different web conditions now, but it's probably fairly still, you know, good enough. It's an art website, and it's about promoting me and my work, and not really anything without compromising too much. And people can get access, little snippets and my clips of the films I work on, and videos, and little bit of information.
Okay. And just for anyone who wants to have a look at that, the web address is www.newoilsky.com. So it's well worth a look. The experimental film that you were talking about, was that The Gloaming? Is that?
Yeah, that's also that's got the a website. That's a 15-minute film. That was part-funded by the Arts Council of England, and various other people locally were involved. Well, predominantly local, and so actress from London as well. Yeah, that's still... It's all my work. Some of it's getting shown in different places. And
what's the story? I mean, don't give anything away, but what's the kind of the synopsis of The Gloaming? What's the...
Well, what I was interested in is the change between, you know, when day becomes night. There's that kind of that period of dusk, which is it's always quite intrigued me. And it's a really beautiful part of the day. And, yeah, the word gloaming is an old-fashioned word for dusk. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with it, really. It's been shown at, well, it could be shown at a couple of festivals soon. I'm not really sure. It's kind of, I put stuff out and I've got quite a lot of projects all running at the same time, really, and previous work, so.
What would you say to a budding filmmaker or someone who's really interested in getting into to film and digital film? What would you say to them in terms of how they could start?
Basically, just try and stick with, be true to your ideas, really, and try and meet some people locally who are interested in similar things to you, and just keep pushing it, really. And the more experience you get, and the more you get out there, and try not to take things to heart too much, because you will get quite a few rejections, but... You know, just don't compromise, and it'll pay off one day. And hopefully, well, it's sort of paying off for me, but it will do more so.
I think that's a great message, and we'll watch your work with interest. And Kai Wilson, thanks very much for coming in and talking to me.
Cheers.
Thanks very much. So I'm joined now by Denise Callender, who is an artist and is promotions manager at the University of Portsmouth. Denise, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. Tell me about some of the things the university's up to in terms of creative and digital art and some of the gallery space that you've got at the university.
Well, the gallery space that I manage is called Space, and it's adjacent to the Eldon Gallery, which is in Eldon Building. And we've got a very exciting exhibition coming up by Beth Fisher called Grisai Legacy. It's actually not a digital exhibition. It's a fantastic exhibition of monumental scale drawings made of charcoal and ink. And they're absolutely superb. They're really stunning because they're done in the sort of style of classical painting, but they're actually contemporary subject matter.
And does the gallery have space that is constantly rotating, or has it got a permanent collection as well, or...?
We don't have a permanent collection, and we don't just show visual arts. It's an event space more than a gallery, actually. And so we have all sorts of things. We have concerts, we have mashups. We've had the Creative Digital Practice and Theory mashup there, which has included a lot of digital art. We've also had Data Golem. That's another project in this region, which is digital practice. And so the university does get very heavily involved and has research projects that are involved in digital media and digital arts. But the actual event space has all sorts of different things that are going on there. And sometimes they're student-led, sometimes they're staff, because we have a lot of creatives working for the university, obviously, teaching the students. We also have local community art projects showing in there. So all kinds of things, and international artists, as Beth next week.
And for folk that want to find those good things, where exactly is the gallery space, just to kind of identify
it? It's in Winston Churchill Avenue, which is opposite the Law Courts.
I know it well. Tell me about some of the collaborative things that you've been up to, because you told me earlier that you're a bit of a serial collaborator. You like the thrill of collaboration.
I do this at work and out of work. I'm an artist out of work. So collaborations with other artists and musicians. I'm currently working on a project with a band called Helsinki. That's my brother's band, which he has with his girlfriend. And they're working on a new album called Arrivals and Departures. And basically, in the past, where they've produced an album, I've created a film for each song, which then gets projected behind them during a live performance, which just gives that extra dimension, as well as having great lights at a live gig performance. But I'm not actually going to do a film for each song this time. I'm going to do more of a sort of overall film for the whole gig. It's going to have a different context.
What is in the film? What does the film capture?
Well, first of all, I'll listen to the music and be inspired by the music. And with my background, I've got a degree in fine art. I will explore some artists, or a lot of the work that I do is autobiographical, so there'll be sort of abstract context to things that are happening in my life or things that I've experienced. It's like an emotional response to something, but it wouldn't necessarily be obvious to the viewer. It'll just be something, you know, it could be somebody's face, or it could have a sort of vague narrative, someone walking along the beach. I'm just trying to think of all the different songs, all the films that have gone with the songs. You'll have to have a look at them.
I will.
There's some on my MySpace page, so have a look on there.
Are some of the film elements linked to particular lyrics in the songs or titles of the songs, or are they...
I think you can't help but be influenced by that. Mm. And it's actually when I've looked back on and watched some of the films that I've made and listened to the lyrics, there's been a stronger link than even I was aware of when I was making the work, which is interesting. Mm. That always happens as an artist. You always understand your work more and see more in it a year later, 2 years later.
It's interesting, I think, nowadays that particularly with bands and musicians, that they have to increasingly work as a kind of as a package and use multimedia. And lots of bands use film or use kind of, you know, web clips and promos, whereas perhaps, I don't know, sort of 50 or 60 years ago, it was literally the sound on the vinyl was the kind of, you know, the key factor.
Right.
Nowadays, it's, you know, there's a whole kind of barrage of things almost.
It's a whole package, isn't it? And online enables that to happen. So, you know, it's I suppose it could eventually be even interactive, where bands could sort of do part of the song and then people could... Well, in fact, that already does happen. I think Radiohead, you can sort of download bits of songs and sort of mix them and create them as you want to. So, yeah, things are changing, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and particularly the music video. If you think... I suppose one of the first music videos in this country was, I think, Bohemian Rhapsody, or certainly one of the first kind of accompaniments.
Oh, fantastic video.
And then the other sort of video that sticks in my mind is Sledgehammer, the Peter Gabriel Aardman video.
Yes.
So it's interesting how it's developed over time.
Mm. The actual pieces that I make for Helsinki are not pop videos, though. They're not, when I say they're films to go with the song, they are... The context is different because they're projected behind them during a live performance. They're not kind of busy like a pop video. They're much more abstract, more video art, because you don't want to take people's attention away from the live performance, because that's a really important part of going to a live gig, to see, you know, that riff that they're playing, or look at that expression that the singer's, you know, portraying. So I think it's really important to complement with film rather than, you know, to take over, which I think pop videos can do.
Tell me something about the importance of networking in terms of linking artists together and getting them to kind of talk about and share bits of work.
Well, Digital Creatives, there was actually a group called Digital Creatives where I met Kai Wilson and Neil Hunt, as well as lots of other artists and filmmakers. It actually arose from a festival called the 62nd Film Festival that Karen Savage organised.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of us used to meet up every month and chat. I was a student at the time. Really enjoyed talking about our work. We used to show our work to each other. And eventually we did start to make work, new work together. And that's how Kai, Neil and I came to make The Kiss and Faces of a Steel Pan Festival. And The Gloaming, of course, which I think Kai Wilson talked about. Networking's really, really important as an artist, a musician, an actor, a business person, anybody. You know, networking is just a really important part of life because it just helps inform your practice. When you discuss ideas with people, you know, it just helps you develop that next step. And also from a commercial point of view, you know, opportunities to sell your work or to meet new people to work with. And it's just fun, isn't it? I mean, at work they call me the network queen because I just like talking to people.
I think some people often dismiss networking as just gossiping, but that is part of it, isn't it? There's a very social element to it.
Absolutely, it's very, very social. And but I do think one important point to it is that don't go to every single event because you'll be worn out.
Mm.
You know, everybody has to work a certain amount during the day, and then if you go to every single networking event in the evening, you know, you won't have the energy. So I think choose the ones that you want to go to and make them worthwhile when you're really focused.
Tell me, that's the real world, if you like. Tell me about some of the things you've been doing in the virtual world. And social networking is a term I think is probably overused these days, but tell me some of the things that you've been doing on MySpace and other channels like that.
I've got quite an interesting story about MySpace, the virtual world, where I was contacted by a producer in the south of France from a band called Curl. And his name's Frank, and he contacted me to find out if I would ask a friend of mine who's in a famous band called The Cranes, Ali, if she would sing on his next album. And she wasn't able to do that because she was involved in projects with The Cranes. And so I suggested that he contact Hayley, who's my sort of sister-in-law, brother's girlfriend. And so he did. And a collaborative project started out of that. For the first kind of 6 months, it was an online project and by post. They sent each other music, telephone calls, text messages. So it was very much a virtual relationship. But then Frank came over to the UK, visited Hayley. They worked together in the studio. They've now created a whole album. Hayley's been over to perform recently twice. The whole band, Curl, have been over from the south of France to here and performed at the Eastern Cellars. So that's an example of networking and a virtual relationship turning into a real relationship.
Okay, great. Denise, thanks for talking to me. Thanks for
coming
in.
Thank you very much.
For more information about Kai and Denise's work, go to www.newoilsky.com or www.myspace.com/Denise Calendar. You can also check out the events and exhibitions currently at the university by going to www.port.ac.uk. All of the music that you've heard in this programme is available on the PodSafe Audio Network. Check it out at podsafeaudio.com. That's it for this programme. Join me next time for more culture from the island at the end of England. Sandy by the Sea is a King of the Buttons production for Express FM.